The Las Vegas Raiders have partnered with the global lifestyle app True Connect to give the gift of wellness. Transform your mind, body, and soul through thousands of hours of premium fitness content, guided meditations, progress tracking, and more. Visit tcfree.fit to redeem one free year of True Connect exclusively for Raider Nation.
How powerful is the Cox Network? So powerful that one day, the internet will let your doctor perform miracles from thousands of miles away.
Connecting to remote operating room.
Giving a whole new meaning to the term house call.
Operation complete.
The Cox Network, with multi-gig speeds now available, it's internet built for tomorrow, today. Cox, bringing us closer. Limited availability in select areas. Speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms apply. Other restrictions may apply.
You're listening to the Raiders NFL Draft Podcast. Here are your hosts, Bucky Brooks and Rhett Lewis.
The 2024 NFL Scouting Combine now in the books as we welcome you back to a post-combine edition of the Raiders NFL Draft Podcast alongside Bucky Brooks. I am Rhett Lewis, Raider Nation. Great to be back here with you as the dust settles on a historic Scouting Combine. And my oh my, if there was ever a time, and we have harkened back to the days of Al Davis and the Davis family's love for speed, and man, come on, like Xavier Worthy, that would have gotten a huge bit of applause and love from the Raiders suite, right? Am I right on that? Because I saw, AP was loving it, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, you just talk about like size and speed has always been a big deal when it comes to the Raiders and how those teams have been constructed in the past. Xavier Worthy putting down that 4-2-1 would certainly catch the attention of the late, great Al Davis. As we're seeing, the more exposure that we give to the combine, the better the athletes and the athleticism displays that we're seeing. These guys have kind of grown up watching it, so they know exactly what is ahead for them and they're preparing for it. And we're seeing fantastic performances when it comes to just the individual workouts, whether it's the 40-yard dash, the three-cone times that we're seeing, the short shuttle times, the way guys are going through positional drills. I can say that we're seeing 300-plus guys, the guys that elect to work out. We're definitely seeing them perform at their best, and that's exactly what you want to see in these performance evaluation type drills.
And that's what it is, man. And, we had the great opportunity to catch up with new GM, Tom Telesco. You and I got a chance to sit down with him there in Indianapolis. I think it was like right before the drills had begun. So, you know, it was kind of like calm before the storm. And then really picked up obviously with Thursday when the defensive linemen and the linebackers got out onto the field. And look, that's kind of what we want to do here. We'll get back to Xavier Worthy and the wide receivers on Saturday, but let's kind of take this thing chronologically. So we'll talk about the DL and the linebackers from Thursday. We'll get into the tight ends and the DBs on from Friday. QBs, wide receivers, running backs went on Saturday. And then of course the offensive linemen finished it out on Sunday. So we'll just kind of bat around, you know, a bunch of guys that we really liked that could fit with the Las Vegas Raiders draft plans, which of course begins with pick number 13 as it stands right now in the first round. And look, let's get into it on Thursday. I mean, I'll just start with my overall winner here, Buck, on Thursday was Braden Fisk from Florida State.
Absolutely.
I think it's hard to look past the fact that you could consider him a winner in every drill, in every test. Right. He checked in at 292 pounds, so a little under 300, right, for a defensive tackle. Wingspans, plenty big, arm length, hand, all that stuff. And then you start talking about the times that he put up, right? He runs 4.78 on the 40-yard dash. That's the official time. 1.68 on the 10, right? So, you know, he's got a little bit of that get off. He ends up with a 33.5-inch vert, a near 10-foot broad jump. 4.67 on the 4.37 on the 20-yard shuttle, which is incredible for a defensive lineman, and didn't do the three-cone. But then he looks so fluid and explosive, right, in all the field work. I mean, if the medical comes out and there is some on him from what we can understand, man, this seems like a dude. I don't know if he's 13th pick material, but definitely on the radar.
He's definitely on the radar, and he should be on the radar for the Raiders. When you think about where areas of need, they need people on the inside that can attack and control the line of scrimmage versus the run. Also want to have some pass rush presence. When you think about the athlete that Fisk is, a guy who you talked about, 6'4", 292 pounds, had that wow athleticism with the 33.5-inch vertical, 9'9" broad jump, and the 40 time. You're just talking about being able to run. It just speaks to the explosive power that he possesses. And as Patrick Graham gets increasingly more comfortable calling this defense with AP kind of in the background, I just believe that this is definitely a prospect that's going to get plenty of love. He's going to be in consideration on day two.
So, yeah, let's talk about that for a second in terms of like the mold that, you know, a Patrick Graham defense. And look, it might change up a little bit, you know, this year with a full year, another full year of he and AP kind of collaborating on how they want this thing to look. But like, do you see this defensive line as more of a T'Vondre Sweat type of body mold, or more, you know, of a Byron Murphy, Braden Fisk type of body mold, which is a little bit more of the like, hey, let's get up the field, let's create havoc in the backfield, or more of the space eater type in Sweat?
You know, it's funny because normally you would say that Sweat would be that coming from New England. You would think that he would be about two gapping and those things,
but they changed type of body.
Yeah, but they changed when he went to Miami, like having being influenced and impacted by Brian Flores and how aggressive Flores was with the pressure schemes. I believe that he would like to have the urgent athlete at the point of attack. And so you talk about Fish, you talk about those guys that can move, that can get after it. Even though they're not a team that is like a high blitz pressure team, you want those guys that are athletic, that can slip in the cracks and create big play opportunities, not only for themselves, but for others.
Any of the other defensive, like let's just stick on the interior for a moment. Any of the other interior guys that that kind of stuck out to you based on what we saw in Indy?
Okay, so now you're gonna have to help me with the Clemson guy's last name, Ruki Ohora.
Oh boy,
that's a lot.
I think you nailed it.
I mean, look, it's a lot, but 6'4", 290, ran 4.90 in the 40, 9'8" broad jump. Really, really good standout. Not necessarily an early round pick, but as we talk about the draft, it's not just about day one, it's about day two and three. And this guy's going to fall right on that line between day two and three. When you think about the athleticism, what he has been able to do, 5 sacks last season, he can play multiple spots. I think versatility is always big. He definitely helped himself with his performance at the combine. And when you cross-reference the combine performance with the tape, he should be in consideration at some point.
See, and I thought you were just going to go Tyler Davis from Clemson. That'd have been a whole lot easier. But no, I thought you nailed it right there. Ruki, definitely had himself a little bit of a day. Let's move to the edge now and get out there and talk about some of those dudes that absolutely blew up the turf out there running the 40-yard dash. I mean, look, we're talking Dallas Turner and Chop Robinson from an athletic perspective. I don't think it gets any better than that, especially when you throw in like Dallas Turner's frame. 6 foot two and change, a little bit under 6 foot three, 84 inch wing, you know, is in there in the 250s. And you're like, holy smokes. And this dude's running the 4.4s. Like that's an absolute freak. And then obviously Chop Robinson, you know, a little bit smaller on the frame side of things, right? Not quite that wing that Turner has, but man, you see the athletic profile and then you see the move and you're like, all right, this fits. This makes sense. Puzzle pieces are fitting together here.
Yeah, he would be more of the puzzle piece fit for the Raiders back in the day because he's more the project, more the projection than the guy that you're basing
talking about off. Chop
Robinson.
Yeah.
Basing off the thing, because when you just see first step quickness, burst, you talk about 34.5-inch vertical, 10.8 broad, 4.48, but that split time of 1.54, that puts him up there in rare territory when it comes to explosiveness for a pass rusher off the edge. And as you look at building this thing out with Max Crosby, Malcolm Kuntz and those guys, but you want to have another situational rusher that's in the hopper. Chop Robinson is likely long gone by the time the Raiders decide they want to add somebody to fortify that defensive line edges. But the kind of prospect that he is, he certainly kind of fits what the Raiders have traditionally gone after.
Yeah. And look, and I think, you know, we're throwing this out there because they're impressive guys, obviously. And I think it'd be a bit of a surprise to see an edge rusher come off the board at 13 based off, you know, Tyree Wilson going, you know, to the Raiders in a first round last year and obviously having a blue chipper and Max Crosby already there. Malcolm Kuntz, you know, has kind of shown now he's a nice rotational piece, but Pass rushers are at a premium. And so those two guys nailed it with the athleticism. I thought Leatu Latu from UCLA was, you know, maybe the winner of the edge group in terms of his fundamentally, you know, and his technically sound type of repertoire with the way he can move around, move his hands, they connect with his feet, and his ability to bend and get around, you know, some of those dummies and some of the drills that they were doing. I thought that was a lot of fun to watch. Now, look, the off-ball linebackers who went, you know, in the final group on Thursday, day one of the combine on-field workouts, definitely feels like a place, and again, probably not at 13, mm-hmm. but a place into day two where you could look to build, continue to build some depth. You know, if you love Robert Spillane, you know, as a foundational piece on the second level, you know, and now you're kind of looking to start fill some more gaps, build some more depth there. There's going to be some dudes, you know, who put up some terrific numbers on day, you know, day two type of second level linebackers. Peyton Wilson from NC State was incredible. I mean, you already saw the production, you know, on tape, but then he goes out there, you know, at 6'3" and 7'8", you know, 235 pounds, and then runs the what do you end up on official 4.43 40 yard mm-hmm. dash. 154 on the 10 yard, you know, and then is 9'11" on the broad. I mean, like, this is an explosive dude. And again, you know, kind of similarly coming back to the medical thing, if that checks out for certain teams, Peyton Wilson might be the first linebacker off the board.
Yeah, I think he very well could be the first linebacker off the board. There was a lot to love about his tape in terms of his activity, the production, the splash plays that he has a knack for being able to make, whether it's sacks, tackles for loss, forced fumbles, fumble recoveries, interceptions, he's always around the ball. When you package that in a guy that is 6'4", that can run into 4.4s, that is very active, has a nasty temperament and demeanor between the tackles, man, what don't you like about him? The fact that he's a tackling machine also bodes in his favor. But the thing that it comes down to really when it comes to Peyton Wilson is, what are the medicals? What are the medicals going to be like? Who's going to pass him on the physical? What do they feel about him? Are you forced to ding him because of his injury history? Because if not for the injury history, the injury concerns, there's little doubt in my mind that he's a first-round player.
Yeah, and then just for like a comparison, NFL-type comparisons to that athletic profile, like in terms of 40-yard dash, you're talking about a guy like Devin White, right, who ran in the 4.4s, you know, and his big dude tackling machine, obviously has had some really good years in Tampa Bay. Darren Lee, on the other hand, was a terrifically athletic and gifted player, didn't really work out, you know, when it got to the league. And then, you know, Edgerrin Cooper and Trevin Wallace, I thought were two more guys, you know, who showed some nice athleticism. Cooper from Texas A&M, Trevin Wallace from Kentucky. Like, you know, you look in their range and you're talking about Patrick Willis, Luke Kuechly. Right. So like good names in terms to associate with the athletic profile of some of these guys. And then a guy from your alma mater, Cedric Gray, you know, from UNC, who I think is a really good player. You know, like you throw, you know, his athletic profile in there with like Jack Campbell from Iowa, who was a first round pick last year. You know, Josh Allen, even as a pass rusher, was kind of in that mix. And then Levante David, you know, Devin White's running mate and the second level for the Tampa Bay Bucks all kind of fit that athletic profile. So I think like when you start to look at the numbers that way and you compare them to guys that have been successful at the next level, it's one way to use this data that we get from the combine to project.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. And that's why the numbers are so important when it comes to the measurements. Everyone wants to know, why do they have to measure hand size and arm length and those things? Because what you're trying to do is you're compiling a database of what plays in the National Football League. And some of the astute evaluators will take those profiles and they'll make sure that they set those as the standards for what you're looking at when it comes to scouting. We want guys that have all of these traits because these are the guys that normally play in the league for a long time. It's as much as we love to think about like, oh, we're going to create a player because of all of these physical dimensions and those things. It's a combination of the physical ability plus the production and performance they show on tape, plus a little luck in terms of how do they fit the scheme that you prefer. All those things are kind of baked into the evaluation, which is why there are no two draft boards that look exactly alike.
Yeah. And then again, just to kind of hit that point home, you know, Cedric Gray compares almost identically to a player who competed in the combine 12 years before him and is an all-pro linebacker for the New Orleans Saints, DeMario Davis. Like when you throw height, weight, arm length, 40-yard dash, broad jump, all in there, and you're talking about almost a dead eye comparison. And you know what? DeMario Davis was a third round pick 77th overall. And so now you're thinking, all right, maybe that Cedric ends up going a little higher than that based off, you know.
But no, that's a great observation because that gives you range. That gives you perspective when you're talking about grading people and putting it together. If you make that comparison to DeMario Davis, well, now you're in finish. You're like, okay, DeMario Davis was a third round pick. He played at a high level. But remember, he came in the league viewed as a third round pick. That was the value of the talent at the time. And even though the league has evolved and shifted, it gives you perspective on where you should be thinking about grade-wise. Because the first rounders, man, they pretty much are flawless when it comes to the evaluation. Right. You're nitpicking at things, but you certainly don't have these huge voids that you're trying to fill up.
Yeah, sure. And I think Edgerrin Cooper, you know, we all thought he was going to run fast. He did. And we all thought he was going to compete really fast in the drills. He did. So like that's, you know, that we kind of thought Jeremiah Trotter Jr. bloodline right there from Clemson with his dad playing, you know, a decade in the league is one of the best backers out there. So there's definitely some opportunities there once we get into round two and round three to perhaps bolster, you know, that Raiders second level of the defense there. All right, let's move into Friday and I'll give you the floor here. To start us off with the defensive back. So corners and safeties were mostly separated into two different groups. And so we can attack the corners first. Anything that particularly stood out to you from the cornerback group? Obviously, Nate Wiggins running 4.28. That makes you take notice.
Yeah, no, Nate Wiggins running 4.28. That really caught my eye, caught every evaluator's eye. You just don't see guys that can run that fast. I would say that I am really impressed with the DBs and the amount of big DBs that we're seeing. When I mean big, I'm talking about guys that measure in at 6 foot or taller. A lot of those guys are in this draft class. I'm impressed with the size. Guys ranging from 185 up are included in the mix, and they have the athleticism, the leaping ability, and those things. I think the most impressive part, though, is not just what they're able to do in terms of like the track and field workout that they go through, but how these guys took advantage of the opportunity to work out in individual drills. Love the footwork. Saw a lot of great turns and transitions. I saw a lot of guys that appeared to have the versatility to play off and press just because of their natural athletic profiles. I think this is a really good cornerback class. Maybe not the stars at the top, but I think from the middle of round one to the top of round three, I think you can get a nice selection of blue chip players.
Okay, so, you know, in that top category, and look, and this could be, you know, under consideration, you know, for the Raiders at 13, you might have your opportunity. You could be faced with the decision where you're like, all right, do I feel the value is there to get, let's say, the fourth offensive tackle or the number one defensive tackle, as we were talking about, could be a sweet spot for a Byron Murphy type, or the number one corner could go off in that range right there. So now your value, you're trying to, you know, having to figure out, you know, where obviously your board's going to dictate it, and they're not necessarily separated by position, but on how we view them as overall players. But I think, you know, like if you have an opportunity to get the number one corner right there, that's hard to pass up. And we've talked a lot about Terrion Arnold. And he's been your number one corner. Nate Wiggins has been in there at two. Cooper DeJean did not test at the combine, but Quinyon Mitchell comes in and continues his rapid rise. He runs a 4.33 40-yard dash. And now you're thinking, all right, we've seen some good tape. He performed really well at the Senior Bowl. Now he's shown us high-level athleticism. Are we talking about potentially cornerback one right here?
Yeah, it's time. It's time to make that conversation because what he's been able to do throughout the process. We talk about these things kind of being mile markers or landmarks or goalposts at each part of the process. You're trying to check it off. So you go through the regular season, you see him dominate at Toledo. You see him at the Senior Bowl, and he is having a terrific week where he's locking up some of the best wide receivers that will enter this year's draft. You then go to the combine and you watch him work out like a madman, posting superhero-like measurements and times and those things. What's not to like about it? And when you talk to the kid, he's wired the right way. He's focused. He's real diligent about how he goes about his business. Man, this is a top prospect. And if not for the little Toledo logo that's affixed to his name, we'd be celebrating everything about this guy.
Yeah, Terrion Arnold, you know, who we had kind of thought might end up as CB1, ends up running a 4.50, which, you know, I don't know that
it's fast enough.
It's not elite, but I would imagine he drops that into the 4.4s at his pro day, and it stops becoming a point of conversation with him. I think you see enough, right?
Yeah, I think everyone sees that he's a polished player, and very similar to the way that Pat Surtain came in. Pat Surtain was under a lot of scrutiny because I don't know if he's going to work out well, and the Alabama guys don't necessarily play well. But I will say that sometimes you got to trust your eyes, and trust your eyes on the amount of times you see this guy make a clean break and put his hands on the ball. The amount of times you see him exhibit toughness, tackling on the perimeter, and those things. He has a lot of tools in his toolbox, and he could be a very likely candidate to come off the board fairly early when it comes to the draft.
Three other guys just to kind of, you know, throw out there in passing here. You know, Daquan Hardy, tied for the shortest. You know, he's tied to be the shortest defensive back at the combine at 5'9" 3/8". So he's not one of those six guys at the combine that were 6'2" or taller, but Hardy was actually, you know, one of the shortest of the combine players in that defensive back group, but also put up the highest vertical jump at 42.5 inches. So now, like, okay, maybe that's not as much of an issue, the height, because you've got the ability to elevate if you need to, and to be there at that contested catch point because of your athleticism. And he's a plus returner, returned two punts for touchdowns for Penn State against UMass this last year in the same game. He's got that ability. So that brings some added value. Ryan Watts is a monster from Texas, over 6'2", 34.5 inch arms. Like, come on, longest arms of anybody out there at the cornerback group. And then another one to watch, Max Melton, brother of Bo Melton, who came on nicely as a rookie last year at wide receiver for the Green Bay Packers. And Max, one of the best corners in the Big Ten Conference, tested really well. 4.34 40 yard dash. He's got some juice, and I think he'll be a day two corner for sure, early day two. All right, safeties, yeah. Bucky.
Safeties. So red safeties. Safeties, this class is one that we fall in love with the ball skills, the just ball production that these guys have been able to put up. Everybody included in the list, included on the list, they all have the ability to take the ball away. I think the biggest thing that we're seeing from the safeties, we're seeing guys that are over 6 feet tall that can run, that obviously give you the ability to maybe be frontline safeties, but they're going to upgrade your special teams units. These are the guys that are going to be your core special teamers running down on kickoffs, being factors in the punt game in terms of coverage and those things. These guys are special because they're gonna make it. They're gonna make their mark as two-way players.
Yeah, I think that's again a good point. And then just some of the names, that stood out to me. I mean, we can't talk about anything with the safety group without mentioning Tyler Owens from Texas Tech. 12-foot 2-inch broad jump, 41 inch vert. So, you know, it's legit, right, on the explosiveness. But then he didn't run the 40. So it's like, you do those jumps before you run the 40, and he's like, you know what,
yeah, man,
I got some pretty good buzz here, let's call it a day.
Yeah, and I'm over here sitting here talking about, you're gonna be one of my guys that I'm counting on to run fast, to be in that conversation. He doesn't run, he does all the broad jump and all that other stuff, but the explosiveness is there. We've seen it. I just am amazed at, like, how these guys are so long but so explosive, and just being able to kind of put that together. The fact that he had a 12-foot 2-inch broad jump, just 1 inch behind Byron Jones, just speaks to the overall explosiveness that he possesses. You get him lined up right, get a chance to run him, he puts that acceptable time up. Now you have a nice conversation about where he fits on the board.
Yeah, for sure. I thought Javon Bullard was an interesting one too, from Georgia. He's up there in your positional rankings for the safeties. Ends up with a 4.42 or 4.47 40-yard dash, but had the 1.51 10-yard. So, like, you know, that in terms of that split shows, he's got that and the long speed to make up some ground if need be. Didn't get a lot of three cone participation or a lot of shuttle participation from the corners and DBs in this group.
Tired after all that running, after all that stuff, after all the things they have to do in their individual workout. By the time they get to those drills, they're like, man, I'll just do it at my pro day.
We're good.
Yeah, we're tired. I'm just not doing it at the pro day because it is a long day, kind of exhausting.
No, and I'll say this, like, I was better at the three cone, Buck, than I was at the short shuttle. Because, the short shuttle shows you more stop and go speed, right? It shows you more that, whereas, the three cone, if you're a good technician, you can manipulate that drill a little bit. Like if you run the heck out of that drill and you work on the technique, like you can drop that time a little bit. Like I think I ran like a 6.79 on the three cone, which, for a guy who ran a 4.640, that don't match up. I was really impressed with Mikey Sainristel from Michigan, who's probably one of the better nickel corners in this class. He ran 4.01, almost sub 4 seconds on the 20-yard shuttle. So that's pretty dang good. So some of those times are things to kind of consider. Tight ends. Now, look, Raiders, I think, hit a good one last year in Michael Mayer in the second round. Mm-hmm. And I think you could always continue to look to fortify the position, maybe a little bit further down the road in terms of value. Maybe you're looking at a day three, and outside of Brock Bowers, I think there might be a pretty good gap in terms of when we see the next guy go. What I mean? So to me, Theo Johnson, ruled the day in the athleticism. But then you had a guy like Dallin Holker, who we saw at the Shrine Bowl. He caught one of the gauntlet drill. He caught the final two passes with each hand and finished carrying both footballs in the same hand. I was like, what?
That's a nice little trick, man. That might be something that you work on. You're like, what
party trick, right?
Yeah. I'm not supposed to catch both balls. I mean,
And then Tip Ryman, absolutely moved the heck out of that sled, right? Fred, the sled that we talk about on the NFL Network broadcast. That was terrific. So I think there's maybe something for everybody in that group, depending on what you need.
Yeah, depending on what you need and what you're willing to pour into in terms of development. Jatavion Saunders didn't run fast, but he's everything that people want when it comes to watching the tape and looking at him just get down the seam and attack defenses. Then you have great athletes like a Theo Johnson, who has the athleticism, has the other stuff, but he doesn't have the performance production that you normally are looking for. Can you get him to go from being a great athlete to being a great player? That is the challenge that the coaching staff will have when you bring him into the building. You're right, though. The tight end position is one that is a little quirky. It's a little difficult to evaluate because the old school Y tight end, the guy that would be attached to the offensive tackle, that guy doesn't exist anymore. All these guys are H-backs and flex tight ends that want to move around in space. And due to Travis Kelce thing, you're looking for the complete guy. The guy can stay on the field all three downs, do it as a run blocker, but also as a pass catcher.
Yeah, so good point. So we had the DBs there and the tight ends on day two. Let's move to day three, where we saw the quarterbacks, running backs, and wide receivers. Start with the running backs because they were up first. And I think this is a position considering, depending on what the Raiders end up doing with Josh Jacobs, from a contract perspective, Trey Benson, I thought, really helped himself. Big dude, ran a sub 4.440. And he's not a track guy like Isaac Garendo is. Mm-hmm. So you think that's impressive speed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is impressive speed. Anytime someone is that big and they can put down times in the 4.3, man, it catches your eye. But what catches my eye when I watch him is how he performed on tape. And there's some things that you would like to see him improve, like finishing his runs with a little more violence and urgency and those things. But what you see from him, when he gets the ball tucked away, he can slip and slide and maneuver in and out of holes. He finishes with a little pop. He has some home run wiggle and ability to his game. As we're looking for the guy that could be the full-time back that could come and really upgrade your team, I think he has to be one of the early ones in consideration to be the top running back off the board.
Great point. And I would agree. And I think Blake Corum was probably the other winner of the day from the running back group based on the time that he put up in the 40 at a low 4.5. I think that was the biggest question for him was the long speed. And I think that's plenty fast enough for me, considering his short area quickness and ability to make guys miss and show some physicality within a 10-yard space.
Yeah, people talk about the drills and the balance and the body control and all that other stuff. He exhibits all that stuff in spades when he has the ball in his hand for the Wolverines. This is a guy that can get from one side of the center's hip all the way to the opposite tackle just on an assortment of jump cuts and slithery moves in between the tackles. What I loved about him and what I love about him as a player is just think about it, man. He's coming off the injury. He goes right back to being the grinder, the workhorse, finishes runs, plays with the balance and physicality that you love, has the ability to make catches out of the backfield. He's just, I would say he's an underrated feature back but I can envision him being the guy that's maybe taking day two, day three, but he comes into the rotation. And before you know it, you can never get him out of the rotation because he's so good in the role that you thrust him in.
Great point. Let's move to the quarterbacks, kind of the main event at the combine. And we had a couple of groups of them obviously mixed in with the wide receivers. So we'll get to them as well here in a second. Look, I don't know if anybody hit, you know, off the charts the way CJ Stroud did a year ago, but to me, this was an interesting one because you had the top three guys not participating, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, whatever order you have them in, whatever order they come off the board, I still think they're all going in the first three or four picks. So like, I kind of understand it from that perspective. And now I thought that this was a great opportunity for Tom Telesco and the Raiders to get a real good handle on a guy who might be the fourth quarterback off the board. And I feel like it's three guys vying for that distinction right now: Bo Nix, Michael Penix Jr., and JJ McCarthy. And to me, in this setting, score one for Michael Penix. Like, I don't know how you can argue with him being the best in show from the quarterbacks.
I don't know how you can argue either. Yeah. Like, I'm having to do a three-word evaluation on him, and I put the three words were natural, gunslinger, and clutch. I mean, he just does it, man. He just has it. He's a natural thrower. He's a gunslinger that wants to push the ball down the field. He is a big play hunter. And then clutch, when you just watch him in big moments, like high leverage moments with the team, the game is hanging in the balance. He always delivers. This is a big time player. And the injury history, the durability concerns are the things that will hold him back from being where he should go in the middle of the first round. But in terms of how he plays and that offense that has options and all this other stuff, this dude is a next level player from the neck up.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And, you know, I thought JJ McCarthy did fine. You know, I thought Bo Nix, you know, I didn't.
It's different, though. It's different. It's a different spin to the ball. It's a different energy. It's just different. And not saying that those guys can't be good players, but there is something about when you just watch Penix spin it, there's a swag to his game, that a confidence to his game that is really infectious.
I would agree with you. And I'm just like, I'm envisioning Davante Adams running those post corners that we saw him hit nonstop, those over routes, right? The Roma Dunze, the post corner he threw to Jalen Polk was probably the throw of the combine down on the field. And so like, I'm picturing that. And I'm like, that is just going to be, that would be money. Now, look, I think you kind of, you could get a little cute with this with Penix, right? Because like, how many teams also have that same view on him? How many teams are willing to take the risk on an older player with some injury history, but it's been pretty clean the last 2 years? You know, maybe you move out of that pick, you accumulate a little more. If you really want Penix, maybe you can get him a little bit further down the line if he's there at 13. So I don't know, like, there's, that's where being a savvy GM like Tom Telesco could really come into play when you're trying to find that quarterback and the top three guys are already off the board.
I mean, that's a good observation. Tom Telesco's experience navigating that position will come in handy.
Yeah, no question. All right, wide receivers. Look, Rome is Rome. Rome's the best. Yeah, you know, there's nothing we can pick at with the game. Like, runs 4.4. He probably could run faster. Jumps fine. I mean, his hands are incredible. Everything you want, he has. Route running, physicality, finesse, run up. It's there. But to me, outside of Roma Dunze, Ladd McConkey was best in show. And then you combine with the fact that he ran a 4.39. He jumps 36. That's plenty, you know, explosive enough on the jumps. And then Ricky Pearsall, who runs 4.4 and jumps 42, I think it was. And so I'm like, there's two dudes who have great route craft, but are now showing you again that they're A-plus athletes. And you're like, okay, sign me.
Look, man, we saw so many of these guys, what, 8 or 9 of these guys ran sub 4.4s. It was like a track meet out there, just being able to blaze the track. We're seeing bigger, faster, stronger. Everyone knows about the notable names, right? You can talk about Roma Dunze running 4.4. You talk about Xavier Worthy putting his time in. People are surprised that maybe Ladd McConkey and Ricky Pearsall putting up great times. But it goes beyond that. How about a big, fast, physical player like a Xavier Leggett running in the 4.3, like doing his thing coming out of South Carolina? There are just wide receivers galore in this draft class, and teams that are bargain shopping, they're going to find some of these guys on day three just because they slipped through the cracks. Because look, this draft is deep in some areas, weaker in others, but there's no doubt the wide receiver class is one of the best that we've seen.
No doubt. So those are just a couple of those names, but I mean, there was plenty of dudes that really stood out in that group. And I thought, but I thought in terms of the field drills, I thought McConkey won the day. Obviously, Xavier Worthy called it a day after running the 4.21 fastest 40 time ever at a combine, you know, at least since 2003. I, you know, obviously that's going to be, you know, a big one there for him. So Luke McCaffrey, another one to watch, you know, I thought
was
kind of interesting. And then I'll throw this back to you. You remember who had the fastest GPS time, the fastest miles per hour time on the gauntlet last year was Puka Nacua. Ends up going fifth round of the Rams. You know, nearly offensive rookie of the year. You know, had the fastest gauntlet time this year. Keon Coleman. Who did not run a fast 40, but maybe showcasing some functional speed there. Mm-hmm. That's kind of important, especially, you know, when you're running routes.
Yeah. And teams are increasingly relying on the GPS systems over the old school clock it stopwatch times. And the reason why is because you can get real game action. How fast are they playing in the game? We can speculate about how fast someone is when they have pads on when in a competitive environment. But the GPS allows you to document it. And the guys who are able to test really well, it's going to help them because it's going to set them apart from others. As much as I love like doing the old school stuff, man, technology allows you to make even better decisions because you have more data. This is just another data tool.
Yep. Okay, let's move to the offensive linemen. And this was guards, tackle, centers. And we had a couple of groups of them on Sunday. And, you know, I think, again, basically our thoughts that we've been talking about for the last few weeks here on the Raiders NFL Draft Podcast, Rhett Lewis, Bucky Brooks, you know, still here with you, is this offensive line group is really special. It's really good. Now, you then combine that with the overall need league-wide, and man, the position group really starts to take off where we're talking about, you know, 7 to 10 offensive linemen going in the first 32 picks with, you know, maybe all of them being tackles. Like, starts at the top with Joe Ault, who the Raiders aren't going to have an opportunity to draft at 13 unless they move up, who, by the way, you know, together with Colton Miller would both stand over 6'8" and would be the tallest tallest tackle group in the league. But I think you get down into the 13 and you could be talking about an Olufoshanu. You could be talking about a Talisi Fuaga, or I would be perfectly happy to run up the card if I'm the Raiders and have Troy Faletanu's name on it from Washington, who I thought was the best of the bunch on the field in Indy.
Oh, man, he was unbelievable. I mean, he's just unbelievable, just the way that he moves around. And this is a guy who has offensive tackle size, but moves around like a wideout. I mean, I know people are loosely tag him as a tight end, but this guy moves light on his feet, finishes blocks, balanced body control. You see all of that, and just the impressive athlete that he is, and it just enhances his value. And at a time where everyone can talk about all of these offensive tackles being first round talents, at some point you got to rank them. You got to rank them and bank them. And it's so subjective to what you like, what kind of football character they exhibit, all of those things. It's a bit of a weird time and space when you're an evaluator trying to figure out how do I stack all of these superheroes that are playing the position now?
Yeah. I mean, cause if you want the big, massive body, you're talking Amarius Mims, who stands 6'7 3/4, 340 pounds, you know, with a ridiculous 36 1/8 inch arm length. And then you're talking about JC Latham, you know, 84 3/8 inch wingspan at 342 pounds, you know, big right tackle, type of road grader, you know. And so like those, there's so many of these tackles that we could go through. You know, I mentioned Faletanu, you know, you throw in Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma, Jordan Morgan from Arizona, Kingsley Sumataia from BYU, I thought had a terrific combine, you know, as well, runs a 4.50 40 at 326 pounds. Like, let's go. And then we get to the interior guys, Buck, you know, the Jackson Powers Johnsons, the Graham Bartons, you know, Christian Haynes, Cooper Beebe from Kansas State. What stands out to you about the interior group?
Well, the interior group is a little different than the guys on the outside. They don't necessarily have like those superheroes, but there's some really good players, throughout the group. I mean, you talked about Cooper Beebe and those guys, but, I am just so focused on my man from Duke, Graham Barton. Who is just so versatile and can do a lot of different things that you absolutely love at the position, all of that. But it's not just him. How about my guy from UConn? Is it Christian Haynes? Christian Haynes, he's just nasty. He's been able to kind of check boxes along the way, regular season work, Senior Bowl work, and dominance. Then you see him at the combine, and you already know on tape he has the mentality. Now you can say that, oh, the athleticism is there, so you feel really good about him day two. There's just a lot of good players on the offensive line, inside and outside, that are just going to make team builders happy, because if they're stuck at another position and be like, you know what we can do? We can't get that other position right, but we certainly can build up a dominant offensive line because there are enough blue chip players on the offensive line prospect pool.
Sure. And, you know, you get into day three, you start looking at some of the traits, you start looking at some of the athleticism of some of these guys. A guy like Patrick Paul, you know, from Houston, whose brother Chris went in the seventh round, not the NBA star, but and Commanders offensive lineman who started seven games for him at guard this last year. And Paul, 86.25-inch wingspan. Like, wow. Come on. That's incredible in terms of playing keep away with guys coming off the edge out there at tackle. So guys like Patrick Paul, Zach Frazier from West Virginia, another one to really kind of take note of, was banged up, but still came out here and competed at the combine. And then we didn't see him at the combine, but Zach Zinter, where does he factor into this thing? You know, after breaking his leg, you know, maybe teams get a little bit of a value on him, you know, maybe day three, whereas he probably goes maybe a little bit higher if he's fully healthy, but now, you know, you get a clean bill of health on him. You know, you got a real value in here whenever you end up selecting him, because was a really good player at Michigan. So there we go, Buck. From interior defensive lineman to interior offensive lineman, you know, we've run through those position groups that stood out there at the combine through all 4 days. And now we kind of turn our attention to free agency. So this is, I feel like, you know, next week, to put a bow on this episode, we're going to have a better feel for where teams quote unquote draft needs, because nobody drafts based off need, only best player available, where those needs are going to be after they fill some holes here in free agency.
Yeah. Now this is part of the puzzle. Like when we think about the way that you build a team is talent acquisition, and you can acquire that talent in free agency or in the draft. And what you don't get fixed in free agency, then you turn your eyes to the drafts and figure out if you can get it done in that regard.
There we go. And that's when our next episode will come to you right smack dab in the middle of the free agency frenzy, as the pre-free agency negotiating window kicks off on Monday, start of the new league year on Wednesday. And we get some of those official signings starting to filter in later in the week. So can't wait to bring you that next free agency focused podcast. But for Bucky Brooks, I am Rhett Lewis. Thanks so much for being with us. Thanks to our friends at Silver and Black Productions, as always. And thanks to you, Raider Nation. We will see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Raiders NFL Draft Podcast. Make sure to subscribe to the Raiders Podcast Network wherever you get your podcasts.